Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele podcast. So if you haven't been able to get your vote on, we've got the folks who can help you do that. Whether you are a felon who's working his or her way back into society and paying all the damn fees, or you're a person with disabilities is trying to figure out how you're going to access the ballot box, or someone who just got the call to work overseas, or you're actually serving overseas. We've got some wonderful guests here to help us walk through it. So welcome back, Lewis, Michelle, and Susan. What is the current state of things from each of your perspectives 5 months out? I'll start with you, Lewis, in terms of where you have states that where you have obviously felons who have serious crimes, rape, murder, they're likely not granted their right to vote again. But otherwise, that space is available. I mean, it's a more open space for a felon, despite some of the difficulties we talked about. Are there states that are coming online that are more and more green lighting not just the return to society for felons, but their full constitutional ability to vote in that society?
Yeah, I think that the, you know, a larger question here is that I don't think that we can cherry pick offenses. I think that the moment that we get into cherry picking more serious offenses or convictions versus less serious convictions, we run into a very, very nuanced gray area as to those people can have it, but these people can't. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to re-enfranchise people who are justice impacted, number one, we need to humanize the experiences of people who are incarcerated. Let me say this, Michael. In the 14 years that I was incarcerated, I never met a felon. I never met an inmate. I never met an ex-con. I met brothers, uncles, aunties, cousins, baby mamas, baby mm-hmm. daddies, right? Mm-hmm. Folks who are in the barbershop understand that. Understand that colloquial term.
You met everybody.
I met everybody, right? But the one thing that I never met the pejorative that the system assigned to us. In terms of, you know, felon, the labels that they assign to us. And so I think that, number one, we need to recondition ourselves as to understanding that the people who are justice impacted in our communities are now a part of our communities. So now that we are here, how do we effectively help them reintegrate into our communities, which is a conversation for another episode. Mm-hmm. But specifically around you know, voting re-enfranchisement, how can we, in effect, espouse the founding principles of this country? Dignity, equality, and justice, not for some people, not for the affluent in Greenwich, Connecticut, or not for the those who are impoverished in Compton, California, but for all people in the United States of America. If you have served your time in this country, if you are, you don't even have to be a tax-paying citizen. If you are a citizen of the United States of America, then there is nothing that should lock you out of the ballot box after you have been locked up in an institution. And so there are initiatives, you know, via states that are making strides. Interestingly enough, Vermont and Maine, that I think demographically it's inarguable that
right.
that they don't necessarily look like
right, exactly.
That look like where I come from, right? They're super progressive. They allow people who are incarcerated to vote while they're incarcerated. And so I think that what we should be doing is we should be looking at people who are American citizens as such. And I'm also glad, I'll say this just as a PS as well. I'm also glad that, and I'm not happy, I'm not reveling in the fact that the former president is now in this situation. But I am glad that it's raising the conversation and it's now raising the consciousness, because the same parties that locked people like Louis L. Reed out of the vote is now have to reconsider. Now that you have the former president
who being is a convicted felon, right?
Yeah, who's now in the fraternity.
I bet you he never thought he'd be in that fraternity.
He's now in the fraternity of folks like me and my cousins and the people that I was incarcerated with. Now, what are we going to do? Now it's not an issue of they versus us. Now it's we have a problem. Now, how are we going to unlock these opportunities for all Americans, not necessarily making this exclusive for some Americans? And well, so I'm glad that we're having this conversation.
That raises an interesting point, though, because, you know, unlike the work that Susan does, where not only does she have a blindfold on, but she has earplugs in and her hands tied behind her back when it comes to party identification and party ballot access, Republican versus Democrat. But in your space, what you find is there is, and you touched on it a little bit, there is this other element that drives it. So for example, when you're looking at the resistance to allowing felons to regain their constitutional right to vote. Statistics shows that felons are four times as likely as non-felons to be Democrats and or politically unaffiliated. And roughly only 20% of those felons will identify themselves as Republicans. So given the partisan-fueled environment that we're in, a lot of what's driving this anti-felon reintegration into the full capacity of citizenship is the fact that, oh, well, we just don't need more Democrats. And you've heard in the past, in places like Florida, for example, and a few other states, where they specifically identify that as a reason not to engage on this subject, because it will basically allow more Democrats on the voting rolls than Republicans. Not only is that just a full out BS argument, because at the end of the day, you just don't know how someone is going to register, and why should you care? That's something that, you know, gets played out at the ballot box. I know a lot of Republicans who vote Democrat and a lot of Democrats who vote Republican. So party affiliation and registration for me as a former party official never really meant that much, which is why I always emphasize the value of the message, the value of the policies we're offering. But that does shape your landscape a lot in terms of the work you're doing, because you have that obstacle where people are laying on top of not only the criminal conviction, but now the assumption of party affiliation that drives their ability to engage or not engage on this issue.
Michael, let me just quote Wesley Snipes in New Jack City.
Mm-hmm.
This is bigger than Nino Brown.
Right.
This is bigger than Nino Brown. And we probably have to go into about several bonus episodes in order to really get into the nuance and the idiosyncrasies around party affiliation and all of those complexities there. But it's exactly what it is that you said. Look, let me also say this as well. I've realized that, you know, crisscrossing this country, doing criminal justice reform, trying to create a pathway to freedom for folks who are justice impacted, I realized that Republicans at their best believe in liberty And Democrats at their best believe in justice. And all of us as Americans at our best should believe in liberty and justice for all people, which includes those who are overseas, which includes those who are disabled, which includes those who are in a justice impacted category. All American citizens, that's what we should be believing, liberty and justice. We cannot have liberty if we are not voting, and then we cannot have justice if we are not voting for all people.
I'm just going to let that sit there marinate, because that's exactly the point. And Michelle, in the disability space, you don't run into the party affiliation issue that you see with the work that Lewis is doing, but you have those other issues that we talked about that create those lanes that go to dead ends. What are you seeing out there now in terms of, as we're getting ready for this upcoming election, what are states doing to create greater accessibility? You talked a little bit about, when you go up to a precinct, what is a disabled person likely to be greeted with, and how is their access being considered 5 months out?
It's a great question as we're sort of charging whether or not we're ready into a major election. And I do think that access is improving. It's very slow. It's far too slow. But it is slowly but steadily moving in the right direction. I think the further we get into this election, one of the things that really concerns me these days is that I think that we fail to include people with disabilities in the electoral process in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we made all our polling places fully accessible and we had fantastic technology in the polling place for folks to use to cast their ballots if they need it, and we solved all these accessibility problems and we had fantastic poll workers who were ready to provide accommodation to people with disabilities, all of it is meaningless if people with disabilities don't show up to cast their ballots. And people with disabilities are, as you said, one of those forgotten communities. And part of that is that candidates and campaigns and parties don't talk about us or think about us or see us. And we're not included in their platforms, and they're not talking to us, and they're not talking about us. And people with disabilities feel very much that they're excluded from democracy, right? Talking about liberty and justice for all, we're not a part of that process. And so people with disabilities have to feel like their vote has meaning, that there's a purpose, that it matters who gets elected, because that person will see them and think about them and what it is that is liberty and justice for people with disabilities to be able to live and work and have meaningful lives in our communities. And I think that's where we're really failing right now. Access is one thing, but access having meaning is another thing entirely. And we really fail to integrate people with disabilities into community life and into the democratic process in a really meaningful way.
That's well said. It's a beautiful point, because there's so much, you're so right. I'm thinking back now, when I was a county chairman here in Prince George's, you're absolutely right. And I'll raise my hand and go, my bad, because we did not give much consideration. You're right. Much consideration to the disabled in the sense that, and here's the thing, to be very honest about it. When someone says disabled, what's the image that pops up in your head? I bet you 9 times out of 10, it's someone in a wheelchair.
Wheelchair. Yeah. That's what happened to me. Yeah.
It's also frequently a white man in a wheelchair.
A white man in a wheelchair. And we don't think about the other ways in which someone is disabled, which means they're unable to do the thing that you're doing and that you take for granted. And that is, I think that's such a profoundly important point, because a lot of it goes to, as we spoke with the idea of the felon and how that part needs to change, how we visualize that, that Lewis was talking about. The same is true in this space. How do we visualize the disabled? And if you just think it's a white man in a wheelchair, then the individual who is an African-American who's blind is going to have a problem. Yep. Or the mom who has other disabling situations is going to have a problem. So that's an important piece in order to fill out what we're talking about here.
Hey, everybody, thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.